Next case for argument, Schultz v. Page, Mr. Hoffman.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. I am Assistant Attorney General Jay Hoffman. I represent the respondent appellant in this case. The sole issue before this court today is whether the petitioner, Stephen Schultz, is entitled to a federal writ of habeas corpus based on his claim that he was not provided with a mental health expert for purposes of possibly raising the defense of insanity at his state court trial at which he was convicted of murdering a woman with whom he was living. That, of course, requires an analysis of whether the decision of the last state court to address the issue was either contrary to or an unreasonable application of United States Supreme Court precedent. Our position is that an objective reading of the record here results in an answer of no. Initially, I must...
Mr. Hoffman, what is the insanity defense in Illinois? I couldn't find a clear description of it in either side's brief. But if you make an insanity defense in Illinois, what do you have to show?
Now it's only one prong. At the time it was two pronged. You had to show
if you made an insanity defense in Illinois at the time
what do you have to show? You had to show either that
as a result of mental disease or defect,
yes.
The defendant was unable to appreciate the wrongfulness of his act
or unable to control himself at the time.
Or
conform his conduct.
Conform his conduct to the dictates of the law, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's one or the other.
One or the other at the time, Your Honor, yes. Initially...
Now, I would think, therefore, that the right question would be to try to figure out whether, if you give this defendant, Mr. Schultz, the most that a psychiatrist might have found, whether it would fit that defense. But oddly, neither side's brief tries to do that.
Well,
right. You're entitled to the assistance of an expert to help you make out the defense under state law. So in order to figure out whether an expert is useful, one really needs to compare it to the defense under state law.
Well, one needs to decide whether or not the decision of the Illinois Appellate Court is contrary to an unreasonable decision based upon Ake. And to do that, you have to decide, you have to line up what the eight factors were and decide whether or not those were present here. Underlying that, yes, you're right, you can look at what the insanity defense was and you would perhaps say, well, could he make that given these factors? The trial court did that, not under Ake, though. And that brings me to my first point. The writ was granted...
You're interested, by the way, the justices themselves pronounce it Ake. They believe it's a Japanese name.
Actually, before yesterday, I also did so, but I was told that certain members of this court prefer Ake. If I was misled, then I apologize.
Somebody lied to you. They don't even know who the panel was.
But that brings me to the first point.
Just call him A.
A.
That'll be safe.
Aiden, perhaps. Makes sense. The district court in this case clearly misfocused when the court did its analysis. It found specifically that the Illinois trial court issued a ruling which was contrary to Ake because by not applying the standards set out by the United States Supreme Court in Ake. However, the last state court to address the issue, and indeed the trial court...
I didn't think that was the issue, really. I thought... To put it in its simplest possible terms, the question was whether this person was entitled to have a psychiatrist testify about his, or at least investigate his situation when the crime was committed, as opposed to even if he was competent at his hearing. Nevertheless, the crime had been committed earlier. Maybe he was nutty then, and. Shouldn't he have been entitled to examination by a psychiatrist with a view to that issue? really all that's involved.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And so our position is that the Illinois Appellate Court correctly cited to Ake, correctly cited that the standard under Ake is whether insanity is likely to be a significant factor at trial, and correctly determined that it was not likely to be so.
Well, now why was that a correct determination? That's the question.
It was a correct determination because there was no indication that the defendant was insane at the time or has ever been found to be insane. There was one indication that approximately a year before the crime, he had been submitted for 2 weeks to a mental health facility and been diagnosed at that time with bipolar disorder. There was indication that...
That sounds pretty significant, you know, manic depressive. Those people can be quite dangerous, so...
Well, that's true, Your Honor, but that's not the only...
You don't recover from it either, you know.
But that's not the only factor to look at when you examine whether or not the person was entitled to...
Let's suppose we come back, I think, to my original question. Let's suppose a psychiatrist would have, if examining this person, have diagnosed him as suffering from, at the time of the offense, from bipolar disorder and from some hallucinations. He saw worms occasionally, apparently. Would that have been a defense under state law? If yes, surely this man is entitled to a psychiatrist to make out that defense. If no, then it's hard to see why it matters. Now, what do we know from Illinois law about whether suffering from bipolar disorder would enable one to make out an insanity defense under the standards of state law?
Suffering from... I can't say that I know cases on that.
You'd have to put the question differently. You'd ask the doctor what the diagnosis was. He says bipolar, and say, doctor, do you have an opinion based on your diagnosis of bipolar disorder as to whether or not this particular person, either in the hypothetical and afraid of, was able to appreciate the criminality of his act or conform his conduct, meet that standard?
That's what you'd have to do.
He says yes or no. But the question of insanity is not a medical one at all, it's a legal one. And that's what I think what Brother Easterbrook is getting at. Is there a possibility that a bipolar disorder can constitute a disability that meets the standard? That is, it affects your ability to appreciate the criminality of your act and conform your conduct thereto. Are there any cases on that subject?
In and of itself, I do not know, Your Honor.
Surely there have been zillions of cases in which people committed crimes in manic state because of this insanity, right?
That's true.
Okay, so if a person committed a crime in the manic phase of being bipolar, when you're depressed, probably you're just lying around thinking about committing suicide, but when you're manic, you're often unconnected with reality, and in a wild state.
It's a medical opinion, Anderson. Go ahead.
So, well, I don't understand. Why would there be an issue about that?
So you're suggesting that any time someone has at one time in the past...
No. The point is, if this is a lifelong condition, manic depression. This is lifelong. If you have it, you can take drugs that will balance your moods more and suppress the symptoms. It's a lifetime condition. So you have manic phases when you go crazy and do really weird things, and depression where it is this suicide risk. So if you had this condition, as apparently this person does, had the condition, then the next question would be, well, was he in a manic phase when the crime was committed? And if he was, he'd have at least a shot at an insanity defense.
Well, first of all, it's not clear that indeed he had the bipolar disease. The testimony of the clinical psychologist who was appointed...
That's a different issue. Supposing he'd been diagnosed, take it one step at a time, if we acknowledge, for purpose of the appeal, that he had this condition, then wouldn't you agree that you'd want a psychiatrist to see whether, when he committed the crime, he was in a manic phase? And if so, there'd be enough that you have at least a jury issue about... whether he knew what he was doing or could conform his behavior to the law.
I don't believe that's what Ake holds. Ake says that you have to make... What you're saying is
Then I don't get you at all. I don't understand. Here we're talking about a person who has a form of insanity, which includes manic phases in which people go wild. And you're saying even if a person has that condition, there's no duty to have a psychiatrist inquire whether he was in one of those manic phases when he committed the crime.
As I understand what you're saying, again, what you're saying, Your Honor, is that if there is one questionable diagnosis...
No, I'd like you to take my... I said I wanted to take it in steps.
Yes, Your Honor.
Suppose it's conceded that he has this disease, which has these manic episodes. Now, wouldn't it be required that if he has this disease which produces manic episodes and he committed a bizarre crime, a psychiatrist should be asked to determine whether he might have been in a manic condition when he committed the crime? Wouldn't that be one of the simplest cases where someone would be entitled to a psychiatric examination?
Quick, say yes,
yes,
before somebody thinks you've
yes.
locked your marble stool.
Sorry.
So your real concern is simply that you don't think this diagnosis of his being bipolar was reliable? Is that your problem?
Well, that's a part of it. And
what's the rest?
Maybe I have to retract and say, no, that's not necessarily so. Because, again, I don't believe simply because one has, and Your Honor says it's a lifelong problem, I don't. That simply because
you don't agree with me. You think I'm wrong. You have your own ideas of what the nature of this disease is.
It is.
I don't know, Your Honor.
It's perfectly possible, is it not, though, that somebody suffering from a bipolar disorder could be in such a state that he would be unable to appreciate the criminality of his act and conform his conduct.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if there has been at one time a diagnosis of bipolar, or take Judge Posner's position that there is an admitted bipolar, just for purposes of hypothetical questioning, then it would be incumbent, would it not, on both the state and the defense to have somebody look at him to arrive at the conclusion as to whether or not that particular manifestation of bipolar disorder had affected his conduct.
I'm not sure that it would. I'm not sure that that means it's likely to be that insanity will be a significant factor.
Well,
at trial.
You never find out whether it's going to be a significant factor unless you get to the point of having a doctor examine him and discuss the fact, was he or was he not? Now, you don't have to accept it. You can get your own doctor that says, nope, he didn't have a damn thing to do with it. His bipolar disorder, that he was as normal as blueberry pie at the time, and therefore, doesn't have the defense. That's the question of fact. But wouldn't you want to have a doctor look at him to give you that opinion?
Wouldn't,
not just have a judge
defendant or wouldn't the judge, isn't it required?
If you were a trial judge and that information were before you, don't you think it is incumbent as a matter of Illinois law that he appoint somebody to look into it?
No, I don't think that they met the requirement under the statute, and I don't
okay.
think just by that they...
Well, at least you're consistent in your position.
I don't think that they met the requirement of eight, that it's likely to be to be a significant factor, simply
okay,
by that. I think it requires
okay,
more...
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Mr. Hubbard?
Before you proceed, Mr. Hubbard, could you tell me where the defendant is at the present time?
He is incarcerated at the Menard Correctional Facility.
Menard Correctional Institution has a strong component of a psychiatric hospital available in there. Has he been examined by doctors, or don't you know?
Your Honor,
there's an evaluation that precedes his going into the institution, which requires he be evaluated by a psychiatrist and a psychiatric report be prepared. Do you know whether one exists or whether has been prepared, or have you seen it?
I have not, Your Honor.
You may take my word for it that it exists. All you have to do, I want to know, did you ever see one?
I did not, Your Honor, and to my knowledge, it is not, it couldn't be part of the record relevant.
I understand it would be an interesting aspect, wouldn't it, in terms of what you're asking the court to do?
Absolutely, yeah. Your Honor, yes. Your Honor, may it please the court. Under Aki, Aki held that an indigent defendant cannot present an insanity defense without an expert to assist in its preparation. That was the premise underlying the Aki decision.
But the premise is also that an insanity defense is available as a matter of state law. In my principal question in looking at this case, the question I asked your adversary, the question all of us have been asking is it a defense as a matter of Illinois law? Could one make out the elements of that defense under Illinois law if a psychiatrist were to examine this man and say that at the time of the crime he was manic depressive and likely in the manic phase and had some delusions, although not seemingly related to the offense? Would that be a defense under state law?
Absolutely, Your Honor. No,
it wouldn't.
What case would you ask us to look at for that proposition?
I'm sorry, I can't give you a specific case. What I would argue, however, is that the...
What you just said wasn't true. If all he says is he had a bipolar disorder, that would not be a defense of the crime. The defense is, as a result of that bipolar disorder, he is unable to appreciate the criminality of his act and conform his conduct. That's the defense. Not the diagnosis by itself doesn't mean anything. It's a diagnosis effect on the behavior in question.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But you never get to that question until you get the first one.
Yes, what I perhaps should have said was, based on a diagnosis of a manic depressive or bipolar disorder, the defendant could show, on one hand, the inability to conform his conduct to the law.
The defendant wouldn't show anything. The doctor has to say that.
Well, yes,
but
Your Honor.
But you don't get that question unless you've got the doctor in the first place, which is why you want to urge upon him the production of a doctor. So, give me a doctor to look at me. Maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong, but let's look.
And that is precisely what counsel for my client Schultz did in this case. The factors that counsel for Schultz presented to the trial court on the eve of trial, having received this late supplemental discovery, were the following. Stephen Schultz had a family history of mental illness, depression, and suicide. He had been hospitalized for 2 weeks the year before the crime for mental illness, and the diagnosis at that time was bipolar disorder. At the time, he'd also been prescribed psychotropic medication, both to address the manic and...
If I understand correctly, the request for psychiatric evaluation was made 4 days before trial?
Yes, that's correct.
And no insanity notice had been given?
No, Your Honor.
What's the consequence of waiting until 4 days before trial to give an insanity defense notice in Illinois?
Well, Your Honor, I would begin by saying that... counsel for Schultz did not wait until 4 days before trial to raise the defense. Rather, he received notice.
He may have reasons. I just want to know what the rule is, because I'm still trying to figure out whether a defense could be raised. And there may be procedural problems with the defense and substantive. Now, if 4 days is too late, maybe there's, in turn, an excuse. But I just want to know what this state rule provides.
Your Honor,
having had the benefit of being a state judge, I need education.
Your Honor, I'm a...
Our state prosecutor.
I cannot answer that question, but I would be glad to provide the court with that information in a supplemental letter.
Thank you.
In addition, as this court is aware, he had been hallucinating at the time. He had the examination that he received months after... the crime noted hallucinations, depression, little motor activity, sleep disturbance, and recommended continuing the psychotropic medication, which would have dealt both with the manic and depressive aspects of his diagnosed disorder. Further, the trial court had in front of it his behavior at the time of trial and at the time of the suppression hearing, which various judges in reviewing this case have described variously as peculiar or disoriented or somewhat abnormal. With all of these factors before the judge at the time of counsel for Schultz's request for appointment of a psychologist, the trial judge did not even order an examination as to his sanity, but instead ordered only a fitness examination and required that it be done by 10 a.m. the next morning. And then at that time, the next morning, or I should say actually the next afternoon, after reviewing the cases, the judge refused to order any further examination or assistance from a psychologist. to Schultz. Now, on appeal, the Illinois Appellate Court dealt as breezily with the issue as the trial judge had, quoting a single paragraph of their decision and pointing only to the fact that the state had not raised sanity and to the fact that Schultz had not pleaded insanity. But with respect to that fact, of course, it would have been premature for Schultz to have pleaded insanity.
I mean, he didn't know about the incarceration or the hospitalization before that day.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The defendant was unaware, and his lawyer was unaware, of the fact that he had been hospitalized for that period of time.
To my knowledge, that is what the record reflects.
That's what the record reflected, if I read it correctly, that 2 days before the trial was to commence, he was given this information. He gave it to the court immediately. The court then ordered a psychiatric evaluation for competency to stand trial without going into the question of his mental condition at the time of the crime.
That's absolutely correct.
And that after the psychiatric evaluation, counsel for the defense renewed his motion for the appointment of a psychiatrist to examine him. Am I correct in my analysis of the record?
Yes, Your Honor. I would like to make one more comment about the Illinois Appellate Court's opinion, since that is the decision that is being reviewed here today. The appellant argues that, in fact, the Illinois Appellate Court was much more thorough in its discussion of Aki. But I invite the court to review that opinion. It is contained as Appendix B in the appellee's brief. After spending one brief paragraph on Aki, it goes on to say that no constitutional rights are implicated in this case and that the decision to appoint an expert is within the sound discretion of the trial judge. And the remainder of their discussion is an argument that, in fact, the trial judge did not abuse his discretion in denying the assistance of a psychologist to Schultz. Now, if that's a discussion of Aki, I submit to this court that is contrary to clearly established Supreme Court precedent, because this is the constitutional right to due process in a criminal trial is not a discretionary call of a trial judge. So I simply reiterate my point that the Illinois Appellate Court's treatment of this Aki issue was very brief and so inadequate as to be an unreasonable application of clearly established Supreme Court precedent. Finally, I would like to note that a couple of cases. First of all, the appellant directs you to the Stewart case, saying that this court has rejected an Aki claim, analogizing it to this case. In that case, this court found the Aki claim to be teed barred. Of course, that is no issue in this case. And in fact, in that case, the defendant had numerous sanity examinations, and I can only reiterate that in this case there was no sanity examination at any point in this criminal proceeding. Sadly, this case represents the sort of brusque treatment that it appears occasionally occurs for criminal defendants who have issues with sanity. As this court recognized in their case, Brown v. Stearns, which came out a couple of months ago and that I supplied this court with a 28-J letter about. I see my time is up if the court has no further questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hubbard. And you were handling this as a pro bono basis.
Yes.
So we thank you very much for your efforts on behalf of the
court. Thank the professor as well.
Okay, next is Major.